It's time for what Podcast International called the greatest podcast in history. Open your ears, because it's time for Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.
Hey, everybody, this is Man Thoughts. Man Thoughts with Brian Callen. That's right. It used to be the Brian Callen Show, but now it's called Man Thoughts. My guest is none other than Nate the Great Marquardt, who is my good friend, and I think in a lot of ways my favorite fighter to watch. You were ridiculous looking in this last fight with Tyrone Wheatley.
Woodley.
I meant Woodley, but I call him Wheatley. And he's a badass, and I'd met him with Eve Edwards once, and he's a lot shorter than you, but he's thick and explosive as hell.
Yeah.
And you're the Strikeforce champion.
That's right.
You're the 170-pound Strikeforce champion.
That's right.
And do you think that coming down to 170, because you were top of the food chain at 185, but I remember talking to you about being at 185, and you felt in some ways that your reach, some of these guys are very long at 85, and you'd be better served at 70, and that's why you went down, right?
Actually, I mean, that's part of it, but the main reason is just how I felt when I get in better shape and get, you know, I lose weight and I go on a diet. I feel so much better.
You were so fast and explosive, and I've actually never seen anybody do those crazy elbows. First of all, that uppercut was retarded. It's what every guy would like to do in a fight, you know, only you did it against a world-class badass motherfucker. Like, that's what every, that's, if you were to say, Brian, you're in a fight and you got a guy against the ropes, what do you want to do? It would have been exactly that combination. Uppercut, then I think you came down with your elbow, then back up with your elbow.
It was basically a 1-2 elbow, left, right, and then he was rocked. And then I threw another right elbow, and he was even more rocked. And then I threw a left uppercut, which basically put him out. And as he was falling, I threw another right uppercut and kind of did like a Pez dispenser on his head.
You're so nice.
Whipped back. Like
you're such a nice guy.
And then I walked away because I knew the ref was going to stop.
You ran. You literally turned and just walked away. You knew it was over.
Yeah. He was out.
Again, that's exactly how I'd like to win a fight. It was ridiculous. And what's funny, because when we did Warrior together, I had seen your fights, and you were such a quiet assassin. Like, I watched you handle all these world-class jiu-jitsu guys, and when you're bringing your elbows and your fists down on somebody's face, I got the DVD so I could hear it, and you had such a kind of a, like, sort of a, when you fight, it's like you have this sort of, because I know you, you're so sweet, you're always smiling, you come to my stand-up, you're always giggling, I can't even see your eyes, you're like, hee-hee. and then I see you out there, and it's a completely different human being. I remember the first time I met you, I was actually a little afraid to meet. I was, as a man, a little bit afraid to approach you. I thought, maybe he's just a sociopath, but you're not. But what do you And I guess the question is, you have such ferocity when you fight. What do you do? What is your mental state there? It's just a different game, I guess. You're in there to fight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every athlete talks about getting in the zone kind of thing, and that's basically where I was. I feel like that whole fight, I was very focused, and, you know, we were talking about the other day, if you feel anger in a fight, and I've been fighting for so long, I don't really feel it's like anger, because I have nothing against this guy, but it's the same, it's similar in a way, because I'm trying to hurt him, and I'm, it's tenacity.
So it's focus?
Yeah, focus plus like tenacity, and just like, you know, I'm out to get this guy, and the first chance I can, I'm gonna, you know, put him out.
Well, you know, just as a performer, I'm not in a ring trying to get the shit kicked out of me, but just as a stand-up comic, I know somebody asked me the other day, said, well, you know, you put out all this energy for an hour and a half, and don't you get nervous? And I was like, you know, I think that after doing it as long as I've done it, you know, for 20 years or whatever, I've learned somehow to harness whatever energy is going on with me, whether it's nervous or angry or tired even, and kind of, I guess, let it inform what I'm doing. It kind of feeds all dimensions of what I'm doing. And my limited experience of fighting, and I'm not, I always laugh because we always joke around, but I've never touched even the area code of where you're at. But being a wrestler and getting to a point where everything was a reaction on the mat, or being doing you know full contact Taekwondo, which is you know don't get too intimidated, but you know, but still the margin for error, somebody can kick your head off and stuff. You are sort of you have to be somewhat in that zone. You have to get to a point where what your patterns and things are reactions, right?
For sure, yeah.
I never got to the point where I was, you know, obviously even close to we were, but I would imagine when you're somebody who has been doing it as long as you have at your level, you've kind of mastered the mindset, I would imagine, in on any given day. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, I know where I have to be mentally walking into a fight, and if I'm not there, I put myself there. And,
right.
And sometimes you don't feel it. Sometimes you feel like crap. Your legs feel weak or whatever it is, or maybe you're just a little lethargic and you have to kind of psych yourself up, or you have to just block out any negative stuff, and so that you get to that spot before the fight.
That's a huge part of it, I think, learning how to talk to yourself as an athlete, right?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And I think that's a very important thing as a human being. And I think I see a lot of people who walk through life they've never learned how to talk to themselves in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about life and the human experience that if you don't condition yourself to talk to yourself properly and in a positive way, you will definitely start talking to yourself in a negative way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You know?
Those thoughts are going to creep in.
Always, right?
Kick them out, yeah.
And the more you go for something, you're a champion now. But that's its own thing to manage, isn't it? I mean, do you find that being a champion, how do you manage other people's expectations of you and stuff?
I actually follow your advice, which I don't know. I'm sure you remember. I don't know. I think it was like 2008, and
yeah.
We were talking about it, and how you were just basically telling me not to do Facebook, not to do Twitter, don't do interviews, just go out there and kick people's asses.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's like the best for me is just don't pay attention to it. You know, obviously fighting at this level, Strikeforce and UFC and stuff, you have to, there's certain interviews and things you have to do. But other than that, I just block it all out. And
yeah, because that's why I remember we talked about that, because I knew as an actor, it's all performance. I mean, you're at war, but I just didn't want you to listen to the adulation. I didn't want you, because you know I as a performer, I knew that you were getting a lot of attention and people were calling you a knockout artist. And the funny thing about compliments,
mm-hmm.
and people calling you a champion and great, is that you'll start actually trying to fulfill their expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't go into a ring with a game plan. You got to go into you have a game plan, but you have to go in the ring kind of reacting to what happens to you in that moment, right? I mean,
yeah, and you'll start believing what people say, whether it's positive or negative, and both can be just as damaging. Like obviously the negative stuff, but with the positive stuff, they can say, "Oh, you're too good for this guy. He's not even on your level." All of a sudden, you're thinking, "Yeah, man, I'm just gonna kill this guy," and you go out and he cracks you in that first round. Like, holy shit, this guy's tough.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
You know, you gotta block all that stuff. You gotta find that zone before.
Well, I was talking to a couple friends of mine about the John Jones fight and how he said no to Chael Sonnen. And everybody said, that's an easy fight for him. Why would he say no? And I said, that's not an easy fight for him. That's not an easy fight for anybody. I mean, Chael Sonnen is a bad, bad motherfucker in any circumstance. And Chael Sonnen can beat anybody in the world at any given time. You know,
he's a world-class wrestler.
He's a world-class wrestler, as you know firsthand.
Yeah.
You know, and he's also a world-class fighter.
Yeah,
and so to say, well, John Jones can just take that fight on a whim, that's you're speaking for John Jones, man. And unless you're going to get in the ring with Chael Sonnen, I think you know people have to be a little bit careful with how they, because when I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, training for Dan Henderson is different than training for Chael Sonnen. Maybe
oh,
not
completely. Henderson's got a big overhand right, and any of his takedowns are from clinch, and Sonnen is in your face. And double leg, and he's like completely different fighter. You know, different height, size, everything. Chael Sonnen is way bigger than Dan Henderson.
You told me that if you would have had to fight Chael Sonnen again, you would have wrestled him.
Yeah, I would have wrestled him and been less. I was overly aggressive on my feet, which gave him the takedown.
Yeah.
So every time I just rushed forward to try to knock him out, rather than picking my shots, picking him apart first, and then. You know, finding
do you think some of that was because people were calling you a knockout artist?
Yeah, possibly,
uh-huh.
possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in a 3-round fight, you know, it didn't work out. You know, I think if
that but sort of toward the end of it though, you were actually getting the best of him.
I felt like I broke him in the third round, but I just ran out of time.
Yeah.
But that being said, I mean, the dude is tough, and you have to respect guys at this level, and there's no easy fights in the UFC. So
there's no easy fights
anybody.
That was the thing I was going to talk to you about. You know, one of the things I've always been so proud of you is that this is a sport of killers. And, you know, I happen to believe that MMA, and I was talking to Jay Moore, the comic, about this. You know, I happen to believe that mixed martial arts is the most difficult sport in the world. And in my opinion, in a lot of ways, the purest sport. You know, people make a big deal about swimming in the Olympics. Well, swimming is about getting to the other side of the pool. It's competitive. It takes a lot of work. But it's also one movement, all right? You just got to know how to crawl or butterfly or backstroke or breaststroke. All right, that's great. By the way, last time I gave a shit about who beats me in a fucking swim race was, I think, 9 years old. So fuck swimming. But then you've got MMA and a guy like you who not only is in a field of killers and has been for years, but you have consistently performed at the top of the food chain. And, you know, people talk, well, that's, you know, he's very physical and very physically gifted. I know you. I know how smart you are. You know, I know how hardworking you are. I know what you're about. One of the things that always amazes me about fighters like yourself, I know Thiago Alves. These guys are smart. You guys are smart. You have to be really smart to be a fighter. And that may sound like, to people who don't know much about fighting, that may sound as though that may sound like I'm romanticizing it. No, I'm not. Because in my opinion, I'm speaking for you, but what I love about MMA is that you've got to know how to do everything. If you're in the ring, you're really fighting somebody. You got to watch out for his hands, his elbows, his knees, his feet, his takedowns, and his submissions. There are so many things you've got to master as a fighter on your level that it's kind of astounding. And every fight is different. And everybody's always getting better. And everybody's a killer. And everybody is someone you don't, like you said, you don't know what the fuck you're going to get when you get in that ring. You don't know. You might have an off night. You might not be warmed up enough when you go in the ring. You might be too warmed up when you go in the ring. There are so many things to balance when you get in a fight. And that's, to me, why I think it's the greatest sport. It's the purest form of competition. Joe Rogan one time said it's the closest you can get to watching two men kill each other with their bare hands.
Oh, you know? Definitely.
So it must be a sort of a great feeling for you to realize that you've accomplished so much already, you know, in this insane sport. You know, do you ever reflect on that, or do you just
a little bit, you know, but. It's hard to right now because I'm still looking forward. I'm still like, I want more. I want to win more fights. I want to get more.
Do you want to go back to the UFC eventually? Obviously,
eventually, yeah. But right now, you know, I want to defend that belt. And there's guys in there, young guys just want to, you know, they're targeting me as the fight of their life, and they're going to train 100% harder than they've ever trained, and they're going to be more ready than they've ever been. And they're going to put everything into the fight. They would die in that ring, in the cage against me.
What do you think is the difference between you now as a fighter and you back then when you were headhunting for the champion?
I mean, there's a lot different. Obviously, technically, I have a lot more. Physically, I'm a lot more, I'm faster, stronger, better cardio. I still feel like I have that hunger and that willingness to go in there and put everything, you know, like I said, if I went in there and died, that's going to happen.
Yeah, you're a stud, dude. You know what's funny is all of us, like me and Dov Davidoff and all my comedian friends, every time we're around you, we're like such girls. We're like, can we feel your muscles? Look at his back. Other men, it's like SEAL Team 6 guys, you know, or like other men around an alpha male like you. It becomes this caveman chimpanzee politics. It's kind of funny. Huh? At the end of the day, we know you can beat the fuck out of everybody in the room or rape us or both. So you feel physically you're that way, but what about the mental edge, the difference?
Mentally, I feel like I understand more, but you know, when I was young, I still had that same hunger and drive, and that honestly, that's the toughest thing to fight about.
Really?
Somebody is, if they're literally willing to go in there and
die
and fight as hard as they can. And if they died in there, like, you know, they're going to choose death over like tapping out or, you know, giving up. And that's the hardest thing to fight. And there's so many guys out there that are like that. And, you know, that's,
are you, said, are you often surprised? Have you ever, like, can you give me some examples and people you couldn't believe were still on their feet after you had hit them with everything you had?
Oh yeah, I'm tons of guys. Because I, you know,
so someone like you who's got crazy power, you've hit dudes in the face full and they haven't gone out. I mean,
yeah, I mean, obviously there's some things that they can't control. So sometimes you catch them and they have no choice whether they're going out or not. But sometimes you'll crack them as hard as you can, but they just move just right and enough to take the punch and stay awake. And they're not willing to fall down, whereas some guys would be like, you know, you hit them, and they realize they're like, oh, I'm done, and they fall down. But other guys are just like, no way, dude. They'll, like I said, they'll give everything they have.
So here's a good question: when you see, like, the people teach a lot of self defense, Krav Maga and Kung Fu, and you know, there are guys that teach you how to defend yourself on the street if you're a woman. As somebody who's so intimately connected to violence. And real violence, where you're in another man's face and it's him or you, and having been mostly on the winning side but also on the losing side a couple of times, Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen, and the list is very short to people who've actually beaten you. It's amazing. But what if you were teaching a self defense class, what would you teach people? What's the first thing you would teach people?
Oh man, that's probably how to stay out of situations.
Oh really?
Yeah, for sure.
In other words,
yeah, like especially for women, I mean, you know, that's a losing battle, a woman against a guy, two untrained people, the stronger person's gonna win.
Yeah.
And if you're smart about it and you can
bring the mic closer
if you're smart about it and just stay out of the situations, that's number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about a headbutt? I headbutted, dude. It really worked one time in Portugal.
And I guess, you know, that's the other thing too, is like there a lot of theory and different moves and stuff, but unless you're doing something that's actually going to take the guy out, I mean,
yeah,
you can kick him in the knee and probably just piss him off or whatever. You know?
I love that. I'll kick him in the balls. Well, a lot of times you miss the balls.
Yeah.
If you now you're looking at me and you're thinking he's a comic, but you're also quietly impressed with my athleticism. We rolled one time on the mat. I think you remember that. I don't appreciate that you're actually giggling about that right now. I don't like that. If you were to fight me in the octagon, what do you think is the first thing you do? And I don't know why you keep smiling like that. It's fucking annoying. But I have a back kick, a wheel kick, and I was a high school wrestler. So a little respect.
Probably have to take you down because I've heard stories about your stand-up.
Thank you. You hear that, America?
Good stand-up.
You hear that, America? You hear that? I'm sure you'd be terrified of my stand-up. Terrified. What give me the people that you'd like to, I mean, are you just, I know you're going to take all comers, but is there someone in particular you'd like to fight?
Well, I mean, right now, being in Strike Force, the guys in Strike Force that are, you know, challenging me basically for the belt right now. One of the guys who just recently fought, Tarek Safadine, he's a very tough guy and I've heard a lot about him and I think he possibly would be the next guy.
What's his discipline?
He's well ran. I believe he's in Team Quest, and he's more of a striker though. He's from Europe, and he has very good
strikers. Are always scarier in some ways, aren't they? Than our wrestlers, because
you've been
rolling for so long, you can always kind of neutralize somebody in that aspect, unless you get very unlucky. But
that's the thing. The thing about strike. So like wrestling and jiu-jitsu and judo, all these grappling sports. The guy, if there's one guy who's much better than the other guy, technically, and you know, it really doesn't matter if let's say they're both strong, explosive, athletic fighters. The better guy, the guy who's more technical and is better, is going to win. Mm-hmm. In striking, I would say that's true also, but you're never going to. So let's take a white belt and a black belt on the ground. The white belt is never going to beat the black belt. Mm-hmm. It's never going to submit him.
Right.
But in striking, you can have a guy equivalent to a black belt on his feet and a guy equivalent to a white belt on his feet. But if the guy who's a white belt can throw a punch hard enough to knock you out,
yeah,
there's a chance that
because if you make a mistake,
you make one mistake and it's good night. So
right,
I think that's the biggest difference. That's the only thing that makes striking, you know, more scary, as you say. Like I would never be scared of a blue belt on the ground.
Right, right. But striking, you always have to.
But you always have to.
There are a lot of guys that can just throw, you know. How do you train? You know, you have a body, like I'm looking at you. You look more like a grappler. But you're actually, from what I've heard and from other people and what I've seen, you are one of those rare guys who's physically, you know, muscular and powerful and looks like a wrestler. Yet you have striking. You have the speed and the dexterity and even the fluid nature of a striker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've been told that, haven't you? I mean, you've spent a lot of time boxing.
Yeah, I mean, so I started both styles. I started jiu-jitsu and stand-up fighting at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So I have the same experience level as far as time.
Okay.
And also, you know, I played basketball a lot for a long time before I started martial arts. And I think basketball is more of a, like you said, fluid and you know, it's more fast twitch,
yeah,
and you know, less about power and
more of a flow.
Yeah.
That's obviously, it's funny because they say that Jose Aldo played soccer on a very high level, and that's one of the reasons he's so good on his feet. I mean, other sports definitely complement. It's funny how you do one thing and it complements another, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
You can get better at what you're really trying to do by sometimes practicing something else, which is, and there's a really good book for you guys listening that I love called The Art of Learning by Josh Waitzkin. Josh Waitzkin was a chess master and then became, now he just went to the Mundials and he trains under Marcelo Garcia. And he's obsessed with jiu-jitsu. He won like the world championships in push hands kung fu, which is a lot of throws. It's a Chinese thing. He's the first non-Asian to do it. But he was a chess prodigy. He was like I don't know if he was a grandmaster, but he was amazing. But he talks about how when he was training really hard in martial arts as a grappler, it helped his chess. He's the kind of guy who could play 50 guys at once in chess. It was like crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a great book. It's a great book. And he has a school in New York that teaches children the art of learning, and they learn through martial arts, I think mathematics and chess.
Oh,
and
wow.
Music.
Okay. Yeah.
And you learn. Oh, yeah. And so much of what, you know, so much of what I really think this whole journey, you know, I mean, so much of life and what's important is not even so much the actual thing that you're doing, but what you get out of it. You know, like to put yourself into the mix at the level you have, what it does, in my opinion, is that it requires so much of you as a human being. And it forces you more importantly to confront so much of your shortcomings, your fears, your tendencies, your habits, that you learn self-mastery. I mean, you learn how to master yourself. That's what being a champion is really about. I mean, I would imagine, right? I mean, where you're learning how to master yourself. That's the process. And in that sense, when I see people who haven't done that, it's always kind of like, and most people haven't, and they run into all kinds of problems.
Yeah, and I don't know if you ever do master yourself, but You get closer and closer.
Right.
You know what I mean, I think there's, I don't know, from what I've seen in this sport and like you said, in life, it just you learn more and more, but you're never going to know everything. And it's just,
that's an answer for somebody who continues to grow. I mean, that's a great answer. Talk a little bit about Anderson Silva, because I'm.
Let's not talk about Anderson Silva or Chael.
The two guys you lost to. Oh, God. That's so funny. But I'm kind of in awe of him because he seems so above the fray. What do you think it is about that guy? What do you think it is about him that allows him to be? I mean, you fought him. You've seen him. What is it about him that makes him seem so fluid? I mean, watching what he did to Chael. And watching how he was able to see what Chael was going to do before he did
it—that's
what's so amazing to me.
You know, I mean, he's a complete fighter. He's mentally strong. He's physically strong. He's an athlete. He has excellent timing, and he's creative. He's good in all areas. Of course, he has weaknesses, you know, but he's a champion at heart, and he figures out a way to win. I mean, you saw it against Chael the first time he fought him. He lost 4.5 rounds.
Yeah.
And just submitted him right at the end. So I mean, it's not that he's, you know, indestructible.
Nope.
It's just that he finds a way to win. He's a champion.
So. Yeah. Well, I think that also, you know, Muhammad Ali used to say, he said, when I'm talking out there and I'm the greatest, I'm talking to myself, man. He said, I'm terrified every time I get in that ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Hicks and Gracie said that fear and intelligence are very closely related. And I don't think anybody's a champion. I think a lot of champions are just as afraid as anybody. You know, and a lot of young people always think, they always like look at a guy like you, you know, a Strikeforce champion, and they kind of talk about it, they act as though the success, and especially being a champion on your level, is some mystical thing that you're born with. You know, you have this thing, and you're really physically gifted. It's so much more than that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even the physical side, I've worked so hard to become the athlete that I am.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all hard work.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be half the athlete I am if I didn't work my whole life towards that.
That's right.
And, but yeah, I mean, the mental game, it's tough, man, and it takes forever to learn. And
do you have a, you know, I call this thing man thoughts, but do you have a primary question that you ask yourself every day? Do you wake up? Is there a mantra you have? Is there something? How do you manage your self-image? How do you keep the negative out? Is it just by doing the shit work and training, or are you showing up, taking the action, or what?
No, I mean, like you're saying before, it's positive self-talk. That's a big part of it. And, you know, my goal is to get better every day and make every day count. And you know, those bad thoughts creep in, and you just have to keep blocking them. Mm-hmm. You just have to you counter them with good thoughts, and you have to believe those good thoughts for it to be real. You know,
what happens for you after fighting? What do you think? What do you want to do? Have you thought that far ahead?
Yeah, you know, I haven't planned it all out because I think you know, I believe I'm going to succeed as a fighter, so I don't.
Well, you already have.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, being a Strikeforce champion is no joke. Because you know, you went through some stuff, and then Dana, you know, you had some problems with the UFC, and you come back and you're the Strikeforce champion, and you couldn't look better. So, you know, I mean, what's your weight right now?
195.
Don't lie to me either.
Yeah, I'm lying. I don't know.
You fucking liar. I knew you were lying. I could tell you're like, 195. I ask all you guys, like, it's like a big secret, like Donald Cerrone. I'm like, what do you weigh? I was like, you look like you're about 195. He's like, no. I'm like 180. I'm like, I don't know about that, dude.
Yeah.
You're not 10 pounds heavier than me, bro. You're a lot bigger than me. That's funny. Yeah. So what do you how do you fucking suck down to 170? That's a lot of weight. That's 30 pounds, man.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have a good diet that I go on.
What is it?
It's just very lean. Mm. I eat lean meats and I eat carbs and everything, just healthy, a lot of vegetables, lower sodium. And I get down to about 188, and that's where I stay pretty much my whole camp as
Oh, really?
I train for my fight. Yeah,
and when
then,
do
so
you,
I have to cut 18 pounds the week of the fight.
Eight of which, let's call, is water. Because I used to suck a lot of weight, but I mean,
I get down to about 179, just with diet the week of by making my body let go of the water without like going in the sauna and stuff.
But you're eating you're never skipping a meal, but you're just eating smaller meals.
I'm eating smaller meals and a lot less carbs the week of, because carbs fill your muscles with glycogen, which is the energy source. But with glycogen, your muscle stores water.
Mm.
So as soon as you burn that glycogen, if you don't restore it in the muscle cell, it won't store the water as well. So
you're eating primarily protein that last.
And I'm eating just
fats, like raw fats and stuff.
Yeah, a little bit, but I mean, I'm pretty much starving that last week.
You're starving.
Tough. Yeah, but
And then what? The last night you just lose it in water.
Yeah, last night in the morning of the weigh-ins, I do a couple hot tub, a couple sauna.
I remember trying to sleep and being that thirsty. Just having wrestled.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And just dreaming about water.
Yeah.
That was the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I always drink water. I drink a ton of water the week of, so I'm really hydrated.
Yeah.
And then the last day is when I lose the water weight.
You weigh in that morning or you weigh in the day before?
Day before.
And then you just hydrate the shit out of yourself, eat a bunch of carbs.
Hydrate and replenish my glycogen.
And how do you, how heavy are you when you walk into that ring?
I mean, I woke up at 188, so by the time fight time is, you know, I'm like 192 or whatever.
That's great.
And I think, you know, it's pretty common.
It's very common. Yeah. The only guy who doesn't do that is Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, probably.
You know, and
And he will be now.
Yeah, well, he's going to be sucking down to 45, right? Yeah. He's got to go down to 45, which means he's got to face Jose Aldo.
Yep.
Which is a scary proposition.
I don't know. Frankie's a stud, man.
Frankie's a stud.
Yeah.
And it seems like Frankie's a stud, not only because he's just a great champion, but also because, you know, I went to that fight in Denver. And I was watching his footwork. I was watching the way he boxes. And I was watching the way he steps and hits at the same time. And it looks like Frank Edgar's had a real boxing camp. Like he has really good... He does, right?
Yeah.
It looks that way. It looks like he's training. He's training with boxers, pure boxers who really understand footwork.
Yep. He has a boxing coach who he works with daily, and he spars with boxers.
A lot of guys have boxing coaches, but they don't have that kind of footwork that Frankie does.
Yeah.
It's the one thing I notice about, you know, there are a lot of guys out there who say they're boxing coaches, but
exactly.
But I mean, it's very when you're the boxers that I'm looking at, the guys who really seem to understand footwork in boxing are the guys like Nate, Nick Diaz, both of whom I fucking love, and yourself and those guys, but especially Frankie. I mean, I was really impressed with that. You know.
Yeah, you hit it on the head. Like, there's a lot of guys who say they teach boxing out there, but they could teach a fitness class. You know, real boxing is angles and footwork.
It's all of that.
You know, you understand where you can hit the guy, where he can't hit you.
My buddy Kieran Gallagher is a great guy, and you've met Kieran. He's a stuntman, and he was a pro boxer.
Okay.
I mean, by the time he was in college, he had 24 pro fights, and Kieran was a big time wrestler out of University of Arizona and everything else. But he was showing me some footwork, and I just wanted to hit mitts. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can hit mitts. He goes, yeah, I know. Everybody can hit mitts. And mitts don't mean a goddamn thing when you're in a fight. Everybody can throw a jab, a right, and then a hook. And I just wanted to show him I could do that. I was like, look, I'm an actor who can throw his hands. It has nothing to do with fighting.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't even let me throw punches. He was just showing me how to step and punch. Like he had me stepping to the left and jabbing at the same time. And then he's showing me these patterns. And I was like, dude. I looked at him and I went, I'm never going to be able to box him. I'm never getting in the ring. He goes, no, dude, it's way too late for you. It was just so funny. You know, it's such a beautiful sport. And but boxing, when you learn pure boxing like Frankie does, and I think you've trained with a lot of guys, Olympic, you know, coaches and things, mm-hmm. boxing footwork has a lot of liabilities, though, in regular MMA, doesn't it? Don't you have to tailor it a little bit?
Yeah, every style you have to tailor. So if it's wrestling, boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, every style has to be tailored to fit into a real MMA fight. But I think boxing footwork is a lot better for MMA than like kickboxing footwork or Muay Thai footwork, which is very limited, basically non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a karate footwork. Is a lot more applicable to an MMA fight.
Because there's more distance you create because you're fighting sort of sideways. What is it?
So the thing with like karate or taekwondo is the distance.
Yeah.
And they're light on their feet. They're not plotty.
Right.
So it's hard to touch them. So if you can't touch the guy, you can't take him down.
That's exactly right. That's what Lyoto Machida, like I was watching him. I was like, well, we kind of did that in taekwondo. I mean, hard to – we were always practicing sliding back and then roundhouse, jump back roundhouse, slide back kick, wheel kick, you know, step to the side. That's what taekwondo is. It's actually, you know, you are learning those kinds of angles.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And you said to me for this fight, which you look so amazing in, you actually went back to your karate teacher. And did you train with him a little bit?
I worked with him once a week, every Friday.
What made you go back to him? Because people make fun of karate. I mean, you know, now that MMA is in the world. But what I've noticed, I'm sorry to interrupt you, what I've noticed is that now that wrestlers are neutralizing each other, now you got a lot of guys who are plotting into each other, just plotting and just kind of boxing, and all due respect to all the fighters. But some of them are, I watch a lot of kind of bad boxing matches nowadays. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, in some ways, there's a lot that karate can probably teach you.
For sure. Aside from all the little tricks that it has, you know, the kicks and the, you know, hand position and punches, it's a it's a tricky sport. So like, you know, I'm gonna trick you into letting me punch you in the face rather than just going out there and saying, oh, I'm gonna hit you with a 1-2.
Right.
Which or like the most common combination that people throw on the mitts, 1-2-3, you know, jab, cross, hook. When have you ever seen anyone land that in a fight? I don't think I've ever seen that land in a fight.
No.
I don't know why everyone does it.
Right. Right. Well, because it makes you feel like you're actually practicing. And unless you have somebody who really understands footwork and understands how to win that corner, how to win that angle.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I think, what Nate did so well against Donald Cerrone, you know, what Nick does so well. You know, those, they do that so they can win that corner. They can get that angle where they can see what you're going to do before you do it, and then they hit you. You know,
yeah.
Condit did a very good job of taking that away from Nate. But anyway, but yeah.
So yeah. Well, Condit has a karate background, so his distance, it's hard for Nick to get that distance.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I love. Do you? I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you? Can you give me the three or four fighters who you just love to watch fight that you have tremendous respect for?
Yeah, I love watching George St. Pierre.
Your training partner for many years.
One of my teammates, and you know, he's shown me a ton of stuff over the years, and the stuff that I use. And you know, I just think it's great how he's not necessarily the best striker or the best ground guy or the best wrestler, but I think he puts everything together the best. So he mixes the striking, the wrestling, and then the wrestling to the ground, everything. He mixes it very well.
He's been knocked, and I think unfairly, but I don't even like to say knocked. But the thing about George is that in a lot of ways he's such a strategic fighter and a very cautious fighter, and he'll find where you're open. Like that jab he used against Koscheck was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It just, Koscheck didn't see it. He just didn't have an answer for it, you know? And he seems to always find a way to get to your Achilles heel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like his whole thing. And somehow he just never gets touched.
Yeah. And he's a very good chess player, by the way.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Oh, that makes sense. He's incredibly strategic.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very strategic.
And when you watch someone like George, sometimes the fight can be a little bit boring because he's so strategic, he's so deliberate, he's so careful, he's a cautious guy. Whereas if you watch someone like Nick Diaz, Nick is going to fight you, man. Nick is going to get in there, for better or for worse, he's going to stand in a phone book with you. And if you're John Daly, when he should take John Daly down, he's not. He's going to box him.
Yeah,
if he's up against a guy who's a great wrestler, he's going to wrestle him. It's like the guy wants to be thrown in the fray, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you know?
It's different style. I mean, the Diaz brothers, especially Nick, is a high output fighter. So he's constantly hitting, not a ton of power, but he breaks guys with his output of punches and just constant
stamina.
Work.
Yeah.
He's constantly in your face fighting you, and if you don't knock him out, then you got a problem because he's going to outlast you and he's going to keep hitting you until the fight's over.
Right. So. My boy Anthony Tambakis, who wrote the movie Warrior, just came up with and wrote down on a piece of paper, Paul Daly.
Paul, yeah, I was thinking that
I'm the worst with names.
John Daly.
Golfer John Daly.
Yeah, I meant the golfer.
That's a fucked up
story. I meant the golfer John Daly. I'll be having Anthony Tambakis on my podcast very soon, who's awesome, great writer. And we're doing a TV show that he wrote called Cinnamon Girl. Yeah, yeah. I'll get a beer. I'll get a beer. Anthony Tambakis, the great Hollywood writer, is taking orders. I want a beer. You're not in training camp.
I'll have a water.
He'll have a water. Yeah, see that? There it is. You see that, man? The guy is disciplined. He's disciplined. Nate Margor. God, what an austere lifestyle. Is there any truth? Is there any truth to a lot of like the Japanese fighters? They don't have sex. They keep their diamond, as it were. They call it their diamond.
What the heck are you talking about?
I don't know. I've heard that. Listen,
their
man,
diamond.
I don't want to get too personal, but the bottom line is.
You mean like their virgins? Is that what
they
you
just
mean?
Keep? They don't have sex for like a week before a fight or 2 weeks to keep their aggression.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys do that. They, you know, it's kind of an old school thing that you see on Rocky and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of guys are married, so you know, so they're not, that way anyway.
So they're not having sex anyway. Married sex? That's disgusting. Ew.
No, I'm just kidding. No, but I don't do it. Me and my wife do it the night before.
Yeah.
I've always found that's where I perform my best.
Is that right?
Yeah. And actually, there's like studies done that prove that your testosterone goes up after right. you have sex the day after.
Makes sense because your body's got to replenish.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Yeah, this is not a porn channel, so if you don't mind, I'd like to continue talking about fighting.
You're gross.
Oh, fuck, exactly. What's your training regimen? Do you lift a lot, or is it mostly just fighting, wrestling? I mean, have you changed? I know that exercise philosophy and stuff has changed a great deal over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And
a ton.
Yeah, and one of which is like people when they're really training. A lot of times, if you're doing weight training, it's remarkable how athletes on your level do very little weight training, or not. They do weight training, but in very short bursts.
Correct.
I mean, sometimes their weight training can be 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's still a transition period because you see a lot of fighters out there doing just way too much training in general. Period. But like, you know, they're in there doing like CrossFit style workouts, which is just too much. When you're sparring, you know, 2-3 days a week, and then you got grappling, and you got wrestling, and you got mitt training and technique training, and then you throw in, you know, 3 days a week of CrossFit. That's just horrible.
It's crazy
for an athlete.
Yeah, you can't replenish after that. Your body. It's funny how fragile the human body is. I mean, when you're training that much. I mean, my buddy's an old school bodybuilder, and when I hire him to train me, he works me out for 20 minutes. That's it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm dead after that. And he's like, dude, I can take your legs. I can turn your legs to mush in 3 minutes. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, what? And then he makes you hop, and he makes you do these weird things. And by the way, in 3 minutes, I'm done. You know, and I'm sore the next day.
Yeah.
You know, so if you know what you're doing and you know how to confuse the central nervous system, you can do that. But let me ask you this. When you train on that level, you're constantly trying to put nutrients back into your body, you mm-hmm. know. And this is where things people get depleted and stuff. What is your philosophy on food? What is your philosophy on the best way to eat? I mean, you have to eat meat as an athlete, would you say?
I believe so. I mean, you know, there's guys that are vegetarian and vegan out there, and I just don't see how they're getting the right nutrition.
The complete protein?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And even enough protein. How are you going to get enough protein from, and you know, soy products are bad for you and
yeah.
Bad for men especially.
Yeah, cuz it
raises estrogen.
Right.
So right. I think my
estrogen raises when I'm around you. Is that weird? Sorry. My voice starts getting really, I'm straight, but I'm just saying. So meat, vegetables, a lot of raw fat, they say up your fat intake.
Yeah, like good fats, like, you know, fish oil and you know, almonds and avocados. Those kind of things are really good for you. They help you burn fat, actually. And then the protein is for recovery and the carbs are for energy.
Do you do shakes?
I do a shake in the morning, and that's pretty much it when I'm on my diet because my calories are lower. No, I do whey. Mixed with like fruit, mixed berries and banana and some yogurt and stuff. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh. So you don't stay away from dairy or any of that stuff? I mean,
I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem with it. Some people have to stay away from it.
Do you find that a lot of fighters are ignorant about how to eat? Definitely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like personally, when I made the decision to drop down to 170, I wanted to do it right. So I hired a dietitian. Mm. Who went to school and has their master's and or you know whatever they went to school for it and I think there's a lot of people out there that can you know tell you how to eat but did they go to school for it? Do they really know what they're talking about
right.
or are they just researching stuff on the internet
right
and I think that's important. I mean for a fighter even just to you know hire a dietitian for one camp and that's pretty much what I did. I hired a dietitian and stuck on the diet ever since.
That's a very smart thing because I think what you put in your body and food is basically a drug. And food and calories have a very different hormonal response. I mean, when you eat a pastry versus a piece of meat, that will have a very different hormonal response in your body.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people don't realize that. So a lot of people just count calories or they say, well, I'm getting this amount of protein, this amount of fat. You've got to know what you're. You know, different kinds of foods have very, very different effects on your body, on your stamina, on your recovery,
mm-hmm.
on everything, you know, even on your mental acuity, you know.
That's right, yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, you see a lot of guys, like, cutting carbs like way too early in their camp, and I mean, you need carbohydrates to train well.
Absolutely.
And if you're you know, cutting carbs that much, you know, 6 weeks out from a fight, you're not getting the best training.
Right. Well, that seems like people, some guys who are just cutting too much weight.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see it in their face. I mean, I think Chael must be sucking a lot of weight to get down to 85.
Yeah, probably.
I mean,
yeah.
He walks around at 225 sometimes.
Yeah, more than that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I see, it's amazing how big some of you guys are. Whenever I'm around, I'm always like, I'm amazed at, like, I'm just like, how the fuck, like Donald Cerrone, like hanging out with him in Denver when he came to my show. I mean, I remember, like, he was almost as big as you were.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
I mean, he's a big guy, and he fights at 155, man.
Yeah. He's pretty thin, you know.
He's thin, lame, but he's not as thick as you
frame.
Are.
He's big frame.
It was so funny, too, because when we were hanging out at the bar, it was Nate and Donald and myself and some and your boy, Cody.
Cody,
he's great. Big, handsome son of a bitch. The women we were with, they were all married, and they were all like, they were all looking at you guys like, I want to meet that guy, and I want to touch him. I was like, guys, fucking relax. I know you're married to civilians, but can you not rape my friends with your eyes over here? They were getting more and more drunk and more, you know, it was just hilarious. I was, you guys didn't notice it because they were talking to me about it. You guys were kind of in your own world, but it was pretty funny. It was really funny. I was very jealous, actually. I don't appreciate that. So when is your next fight?
They're talking November right now, so I don't know exactly the date. They're saying possibly November 3rd. But
do you know who you're gonna fight?
No, I'm assuming it'll be either Tarek Saffedine. There's another guy, Jason High, or Jordan Main.
Is there any talk about maybe going to the UFC afterwards, or not yet? You don't know.
You know, I hear talk, but honestly, whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen. Right now, I just have to defend my belt and build myself up in Strikeforce and do the best I can there. And
you got your hands
when it
full.
Happens, it's gonna,
you got your hands
happen
full
when it happens.
Yeah, and I wouldn't you agree that the fighters in Strikeforce in a lot of ways are the same caliber as the fighters in the UFC? I mean,
I mean, sometimes you get those seasoned guys, and you know they're very skilled, but they're not hungry. And I think that, like I was saying, the toughest thing to fight in a guy is that drive and that mental.
Trying to make his name.
Yeah, somebody who's going to lay everything they have out there and just literally go till he has a heart attack. That's a lot tougher to fight than a guy who's going to try to beat you with skill.
That's what's just amazing to me about just how freaking difficult your job is. Just as a stand-up comic, I can just do my thing and, you know, I develop an audience, they like me, and I get off stage and I take some pictures and sign some, you know, whatever. You've got to be in. You got to get in the fucking ring and literally fight for your life. You got to fight for your fucking job.
Yeah.
You know, everybody throws around all these, like, you know, sayings like, it's a fight. Life's a war, dude. Let me tell you something. It's really fucking tough. You got no idea, man. Every single day. And, you know, somebody was telling me the other day, when you're horseback riding, believe me, when you're a competitive horseback rider, you're using every single muscle in your body. Shut the fuck up. Shut up right now or I'll beat you and your horse up. Okay. I don't want to fucking hear it. You fucking non-American, shut up. Don't ever talk to me again. Fucking get into a ring, get on a mat, and you want to throw up in 3 minutes. I'll fucking, oh God, I can't stand it. It's like, it's the one thing I will say about someone at your level and what you've done with your life is that you are very acutely aware of what the concept reality is.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, you live in a fucking very real world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, look, so do doctors who deal with cancer patients, and so do soldiers who see their friends die. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I think that, to me, that's like the top right there, the soldiers. I mean, I have the utmost respect for those guys. I mean,
you know,
it's funny because I talk to a lot of soldiers that are like, man, you guys are crazy. And I'm thinking, are you crazy? Do you know what you're doing?
Yeah, you guys are actually.
You're literally risking your life out there.
Yeah, yeah, it's
but,
true.
Yeah, it's.
But it's all relative, you know. It's all compartmentalized. I was talking the other day about, I was in Afghanistan and I met one of these special forces guys, you know, he's a real badass. And we as men have a concept of what a hero is, you know. I mean, I would even say what drives most of us is the fact that we want to be a hero. And that's kind of what a champion is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we never lose the motif. We never lose as men wanting to be a superhero. I mean, yeah. You know, we don't. And I think that's what drives all of us. You know, it's what people are fascinated with you about, and why people look up to you, guys like you who are in the UFC, and, you know, and especially guys at your level or Strikeforce. And, but, you know, your hero, your sense of what a hero is can change very quickly. If you have both your legs broken or you have a terminal disease, your hero suddenly becomes that little doctor with the white coat and the very mm-hmm. soft hands with a whole bunch of fucking degrees on the wall.
Yep.
Or the nurse that administers your pain medication when you need it. You know, it's just funny how everything is relative, man. Everything mm-hmm. changes. Everything is, you know, it's masculinity and the things that drive us. The concept of that changes as well. And even what you consider a sense of accomplishment, you know, for me, as I get more mature, it used to be, I guess, accomplishment was tied in with recognition, how many acting jobs I had or how often you get recognized, because it's a marker for how successful you're being. I never think about that stuff anymore. It's mm-hmm. my journey has become so personal. You know, I'm only concerned with self-expression and being as honest as I can with my self-expression. You know, so that I'm being really true to my own myself. True to, you know, when I write stand-up now, I don't even try to write funny. I just start thinking about what I really think about, what's really honest to me.
Yeah.
And it's always amazing how it pays dividends. Does any of what I just said as a fighter bear relevance? Do you find...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, for me, success, you know, being a fighter, I'm not even thinking about that with the word success. For me, it's my family, you know, my wife, my kids, how good of a Christian I am. And, you know, if being a fighter, and then, like you said, it's not about how many belts and stuff you win. For me, it's like, did I do my best? Did I go fight my heart out? And if the answer is yes, then the outcome is irrelevant. It's like, I did my best.
You brought up your faith. What is being a Christian to you? What does that mean?
I mean, you know, that's a tough...
Is it a verb? It's a verb, right?
A verb.
In other words, being a Christian, I would imagine for you is something active, as opposed to just I'm a Christian, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it a verb? I mean, is it? Maybe you haven't thought about it that much.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it, but definitely judging success. I would say for me it is a verb in that respect.
Mm.
It's you know, do I, how good of a Christian I am? Do I try to do the right things? Do I try to lead people to Christ? And do I do my best to, you know, to raise a family?
There were always in Christianity two modes of thought. One was the notion of just being a Christian, which is all you have to do is believe in Jesus Christ and that's it. And then there was another notion, which was the idea that if you really want to be a Christian, you have to walk in Christ's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to behave the way he did. You've got to give to the needy. You've got to walk with a bowed head and a humble heart and actually take actions that make the world a better place, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Which you probably do in a lot of ways as a fighter. I mean, your example that you set.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you going to say?
There's tons of verses in the Bible that basically say... You know, like you said, if you're saved, you're saved. But you can tell if someone's saved by their actions. So if a tree doesn't bear fruit, cut it down. If it's, you know, if your life doesn't bear fruit, then you're worthless.
Mm.
You know, you're probably not a Christian if you're not doing good things. If you're not doing all the things you just mentioned.
Well, you know, I'm not a very religious person, but one of the things that I was talking to Joe Rogan about, and I talked to some of my older friends because we're older than you are. I look younger probably, but I'm older. But one of the things we were talking about is that as you get older, you realize that a huge part of masculinity and a huge part of just being a responsible human being is trying to make the world a better place, trying to actually have a good effect, leaving behind mm-hmm. something worth pointing to,
yep.
Something that provides inspiration, you know?
Yep.
Which you know, I would imagine you draw a great deal of inspiration from your faith, especially when you're about to step in that ring.
For sure.
And you're about to go to war. Am I right?
And confidence. Yeah.
And confidence.
Yeah. For me, that's my strength and confidence. Like, you know, I can fall back on that, and
yeah,
it makes me mentally strong.
Huh.
But yeah, it's
there's that saying, there are no atheists in a foxhole.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I always find it very interesting that there are a lot of fighters that are religious, and there are a lot of people who really put themselves out there, They need something to draw on. Mm-hmm. They need faith, because it is an act of faith. You know, my buddy and I were talking, and Anthony's a great writer, and we were talking about a book that Oscar Wilde, I'm sorry, it's called The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, won a Pulitzer Prize, and it's by a guy named Junot Diaz. It took him 10 years to write that book.
Oh,
10
wow.
years of research. And thank you, Anthony. I just got my beer, and Nate just got his water. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers it is. There it is. And one of the things that is, anything that's worth it, Soft J. Anything that's worth it in life is an act of faith. Anything that's worth it is an act of faith. And if you really put yourself on the line and try to do something special and original, and if you try to shock yourself or surprise yourself, which all of you should be trying to do, it's scary because you might fail, and it is an act of faith.
Yeah.
And but there's almost nothing else worth doing.
That's right. Yeah. If there's no risk, then it's not yeah. worthwhile.
Nate Marco, I want to thank you for giving me a great interview. We're at 55 minutes.
Sweet.
I like to keep it tight. You're all right. You are all right. And I appreciate you wearing shorts like that in my hotel room here in Vegas.
Oh, yeah,
sure. Yeah. I don't look good in shorts like that. I tend to look like I have rickets, and that bothers me. Are you coming to my show tomorrow night?
Yes.
All right.
What time are you on?
8:15.
Tomorrow you're on.
I'm on at 8:15 tomorrow night.
So the show starts and 15 minutes later you're on?
No, I'll be
oh,
on.
Okay.
Like yeah, I'll be on at 8:45.
Yeah.
I have an opener.
Because I know.
I have a bidet. Yeah. By the way, everybody, I have a bidet in my bathroom. In my suite in Vegas. That's who you're dealing with. That's who you're listening to. That's my status.
That's high class, right?
I have a bidet. I can wash my asshole after I poo. And sometimes I don't even wash my asshole after I poo. I just wash it anyway. People are like, Ryan, you just washed it 3 times. I'm like, shut the fuck up. I'm going to wash it again. So I got that going for me. Boy, I really ended this podcast on a positive, high mode, mature note. Hey, everybody, thank you so much. I will be at the House of Comedy in Minneapolis. Let me just tell you what the date is. I'm really prepared here. I'll tell you what. I'm so prepared. Hold on. I'm so lazy with this shit. My agents are like, you got to start being a lot more, you know, you got to tell people. Yeah, I'll be at the Brea Improv in Brea, California, the 13th of September, 14th of September, 15th of September, 16th of September. The fun continues when I'm in Minneapolis at the House of Comedy on September 19th, 20th, 21st, 22nd. So show up.
Guys, if you haven't seen him, he's awesome. I have to tell you that the first time I saw him doing stand-up, you know, he was my friend for a while, and I showed up to his show, and I was nervous that he wasn't going to be funny because he's so funny in person. And I remember being nervous, like, oh, man, what if he just, like, bombs? And he is freaking hilarious, so you got
to
see him.
I remember watching you laugh so hard. It was so great. I remember you and Donald Cerrone coming to my show. It was so exciting because I kept seeing Donald's hat. His hat kept going up and down because laughing so hard.
Donald was so loud. He was laughing so loud.
It was great. It's funny. Nothing like the greatest thing about being a comic is I can make great fighters laugh their ass off. And in some ways, I have the control. You know, it's a beautiful
sure.
thing.
Keep telling yourself that.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. All right, man. Listen.
Hey, and check out my website, NateMarquardt.com.
Oh, yeah. Nate Marco. Spell your last name.
MarquardT.
There it is, NateMarquardt.com. You got to change your name, man. It's just too long. Fuck, I don't know how to spell that shit. Hey, guys, I don't know how to spell it. Nate Marquardt.
You could probably Google it, and it'll start to come
yeah.
up.
Yeah. I would love to continue this podcast, but Nate and I are probably going to roll around now, and I'm going to show him what a leg sweep is. I'm going to sweep the leg. Why are you laughing? Fucking laughing, they did. Fucking laughing at me.
You've been listening to Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.